As anyone who's taken a trip to the emergency room or been in the hospital for surgery can attest, medical bills can be astronomical. The ongoing healthcare debate focuses on who will pay the bill, but is that the right question to be asking? Stephen Brill, never one to shy away from a complicated issue, has jumped into the discussion with the cover article in the current issue of Time magazine. In it, he claims that the more relevant question is, why are the costs for medical procedures so high? In Bitter Pill, How Outrageous Pricing and Egregious Profits Are Destroying Our Healthcare, the longest article ever published in Time, Mr. Brill deciphers and deconstructs individual medical bills, revealing markups and price gouging that would be considered unacceptable in any other business, and asks, is it possible to have a free market when it comes to healthcare? If the current system is unsustainable, what will it take to structure a system that's fair to both the consumer and the provider? I'm very pleased to welcome Stephen Brill back to our show. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. You have written mostly
it's
on legal.
Good that you're well.
Yeah, well, after reading this article, I'm more scared than ever. In fact, there's so much stuff. I don't know if we can get to everything, but we'll try. Still, I was wondering, you've written mostly on legal matters in the past, although the last time you were here, we discussed educational policies. How did you come to write this article?
I just like to jump into things that I'm curious about. And for years, I've been curious about why medical bills are just so high. And it's always frustrated me just listening to the debate over Obamacare and healthcare reform even before then in the Clinton presidency. It was always about who should pay all these high bills, not about how come they're so high in the first place.
And you looked at a lot of bills and you publish a fair number of them here.
Right.
And you highlight some of the more egregious things that occur. And they're shocking.
No, they are. And it just makes no sense. It's sort of like, you know, you read all these stories in the paper about the F-35 bomber, whatever it is, and it costs $50 or $100 or $150 million. And when I read something like that, I say, well, how come? Who's making all that money? So if you tell me that, as in the case of one of the bills I look at, that someone, you know, who has some chest pains, which turn out to be indigestion, and goes to the emergency room and gets, you know, checked out to see if she's having a heart attack, and leaves with a $21,000 bill, which is, you know, the cost of going to college for a semester, and she's there for a few hours, the first question is, well, how come? Why is that? And who's making that money? So I decided to follow the money.
And some of the charges are so outrageously petty, like a tablet of niacin costing $24.
Right. Which costs a nickel if you go to the CVS and buy them in a bottle of 100, and one assumes a hospital has better buying power than you have when you go to CVS.
So, do we have any sense of how they mark these things up?
They don't have any sense, if you believe them, about how they mark these things up. They use something, as you know from having read it, called the charge master. And every hospital has one. Every hospital's charge master is different, and it's now a computer list. It used to be a phone book-sized book of 6,000 or 7,000 or 5,000 different items, ranging from the niacin pill to the blanket warmer that they use if you're in the operating room, to the lampshade that they put over the light in the operating room,
or the gauze that they put on the wound,
to a chest X-ray, to an MRI, and they just have all these different charges. And if you go from one hospital to another, all the charges are different. No one can explain the provenance of the charges. Just that, well, they, you know, we put them in years back, and we just keep raising them 4, 5, or 6%. But don't worry about it. No one really ever pays this. But of course, people who are uninsured are charged that and do pay it. And even if you're insured, your insurance company is negotiating discounts off of those ridiculous prices. So that if I get, if I'm running an insurance company and I negotiate a 50 or even 60% discount off of a $25 niacin pill, that's still not such a good deal.
Now, the charge master is just a computer program, is that it? And then each hospital
types in, says
how much we're going to charge for an MRI at this hospital. The next hospital can charge a totally different amount.
Totally different, and neither one can explain it. And
the point is they don't have to explain it.
Because
how wide a range of cost are we talking about with an MRI or a the cup that a pill is dispensed in.
I read one survey where someone just looked at the total cost for an appendix operation in, I think it was in California, and it ranged from $4,000 to $40,000, something like that, with no explanation, no rationale. And it wasn't even that one was a less expensive hospital and one was a more expensive hospital. If you flipped the hospitals around and picked a different kind of treatment, the less expensive hospital could have been the more expensive hospital. And the point is, most nonprofit hospitals are making a lot of profit in small towns, especially, and, you know, the medium-sized cities around the country. For example, one of the places I look at is Stamford, Connecticut. The hospital is typically the most profitable business in town. The CEO of the hospital, the non-doctor administrator, is typically the most highly compensated CEO in town. Now, in Stamford, you'd have to exclude, you know, all the hedge funds that are resident there, but they're not local businesses. And it's just an extraordinary thing where it's as if the healthcare economy is on a different planet than the rest of our economy.
Well, you point out not just Stamford, but New York City.
New York City.
That the largest private employers in New York City are either banks or hospitals.
Well, you would think, you know, New York City is the financial services capital of the world. And I think I point out that of the 18 or 20 largest employers in New York City, 8 are hospitals and 4 are banks. And that's pretty much true across the country.
So if I were faced with an operation for an appendix, a burst appendix, I don't have much time, could my doctor still call around to 3 different hospitals and find out how much it would cost?
He's not likely – he or she is not likely to, because one of the other trends that I noticed is that hospitals are buying up doctors' practices, or if they're not buying them up completely so that they own them – they're making alliances with doctors so that in exchange for the doctor being able to practice in Hospital A, he or she has to agree not to send patients to Hospital B. So your doctor's going to send you to his or her favorite hospital, typically. Now, if you wanted to shop around for something where, you know, you have a week or two or a month or two to decide, like, a knee replacement or something, maybe you could do that in theory because it's not an emergency. But again, you've probably found a doctor that you trust, and the doctor's going to send you to the hospital that he works with.
What kinds of response did you receive from hospitals when you asked about the Chargemaster rates?
First, they said it doesn't matter. It doesn't really count because not too many people pay those rates.
Because they're going to charge it to insurance companies,
yeah,
or
insurance
Medicare.
Insurance companies are going to get a discount, and Medicare is going to get an even bigger discount. And but they also uniformly refuse to explain specific charges, such as the niacin pill, saying that that would violate a federal law called the HIPAA statute, which is the federal law governing the privacy of medical records. To which I responded, well, I don't particularly care about you're talking about any patient. You know, just why, as a general matter, do you charge X dollars for a niacin pill? Or better yet, you charge in your operating room, you charge, $38 for a disposable surgeon's gown, which you can buy on eBay, let's say, for $6. I just want to know why you're charging for the surgeon's gown. How does it invade the privacy of the patient? It may invade the privacy of the surgeon, maybe if you have to get him an extra large gown. But, you know, we're not even talking about that.
So what did they say?
They said, oh, no, that would be illegal. And I said, well, I have a little bit of legal background. I've read the law. There's nothing in the law that says that. And, oh, no, that would be illegal. We can't talk about that.
My guest is Stephen Brill, whose article, Bitter Pill, How Outrageous Pricing and Egregious Profits Are Destroying Our Healthcare, is in the current issue of Time magazine. Can you describe the process? Oh, by the way, I should mention that this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Can you describe the process through which insurers negotiate specific charges for procedures
Sure.
that are listed on a patient's bill?
Sure. Let me just add one thing about the charge of $77 for, a box of, gauze pads. The other explanation the hospitals will have for that is, well, you know, we provide all this care and this is to cover our overhead and cover everything else we do at the hospital. And the answer to that is, in that particular case, they were also charging $1,791 for the room. So one assumes that, you know, you
a
can
night?
Throw
it.
Yeah.
And this it added up to $348,000 altogether.
Yes, yeah, so
they could have given
assumes,
a little discount.
You know, you can throw in the niacin pill for a nickel in that, or you can throw in the gauze pads. How do insurance companies negotiate? With increasing difficulty, because hospitals are consolidating, and it's basically, you know, sort of a game of leverage or chicken in a way. If I want to sell health insurance in Oklahoma City, I'm a I'm an insurance company, and I want to sell to people in Oklahoma City. If there's only one major hospital in Oklahoma City, or only two of them, I better have them in my network and be able to have my beneficiaries covered in that hospital. So now the hospital may know it's the only game in town and therefore can drive a hard bargain. To give you a good example, here in New York, all the major insurance companies have Memorial Sloan Kettering in their network because it is the great hospital for cancer. Everybody knows that. And no major employer buying health insurance for its employees is going to want to have a policy where those employees, if God forbid they get cancer, can't go to Sloan Kettering. So Sloan Kettering is able to drive a much harder bargain and give much lower discounts off of his charge master than, let's say, some hospital where there are six hospitals in town. The issue is there almost aren't any towns anymore where there's a lot of competition among the hospitals.
And we have hospital closings in New York on a regular
basis, it seems. The big ones keep consolidating and they gobble up physicians' practices. So if they take over a big practice, then and the physicians who've been taken over have pledged to send their patients to that big hospital, that's what causes the smaller hospitals to shut down.
Now, you have examples in this article of double and triple billing for items and procedures. Do the insurance companies catch that?
The insurance companies do catch it, pretty much.
But, why do they even do
but
that?
But only to some extent. For example, the case you're talking about where they're talking about, you know, double and triple billing, it works like this. This person goes in for outpatient a surgery to implant some kind of a stimulator in his back to fix his aching back. And they charge a facility fee for the operating room of, I don't know, a couple thousand dollars or something. Then they charge for these kits that are in the operating room, the surgical kits that have all the equipment in it, like the gauze pads, the scalpel, all the stuff you need for surgery. They charge for the kit. Then on the bill, they charge for each individual item in the kit.
Separate. So you're paying for the overall bill of the kit, and then you're paying for the gauze pads and the bandages,
right,
and whatever.
Now, when Medicare shows up, if that patient had been on Medicare, Medicare would have said, hey, you know what? When you charged us for the operating room, we assume that your operating room, in fact, the law says your operating room comes with that kit. So don't charge us for the kit, and God knows, don't charge us again for what's in the kit. So Medicare just wipes those charges out.
But I wonder how much more that's costing us, because you have to have somebody in the government or in an insurance company going through all these bills and finding these.
Well, it doesn't cost Medicare that much, because as I found and as you read, they have an exquisitely efficient computer system that looks at bills and finds that stuff easily. Insurance companies, yes. And in fact, with insurance companies, in the case we're talking about, it was a self-insurance policy by a union, which means they weren't in the network in Oklahoma City, and they only got a 40% discount off of that bill. So these horrendous overcharges only resulted in a 40% discount off of these horrendous overcharges, which, again, if someone's asking you to pay, you know, $100 for an item that costs a dollar and you get a 40% discount, it's not exactly a victory.
Is it possible for patients to negotiate their hospital bills? Let's say I look at the bill. I'm not insured. I say $24 for a niacin pill?
Almost any patient. The dirty little secret is that almost any patient that pushes back will get typically off of the Chargemaster, they'll get 40 to 50% off of the Chargemaster just by squawking. And if they hire what I identified in the article as a billing advocate, who is there are these people who now form this cottage industry sort of by accident of, you know, they're not trained as lawyers or accountants. They just sort of understand medical bills because they've learned it in some cases, you know, by fighting their own. And they work out of their homes and they take your bill and they call the hospital or they call the insurance company if there's an insurance dispute. And just by complaining and knowing the language, they will get you a 40 or 50% discount.
Diana in Brooklyn left this comment on our show page. She says, I work at a healthcare clinic's billing department, and it's really sad how little people really understand about their healthcare coverage. I believe no single party is to blame for the situation we're in, and we keep digging ourselves deeper.
Well, there is a single party that's to blame, and that's the people who sell it. If you have a marketplace where the buyers have no power, then if there's an abuse in the marketplace, the abuse, now it may not be, you know, malevolent, it may not be anything other than, you know, we've gradually been doing this because we can, but the abuse is on the part of the sellers. You know, just to give you an example, if you decide today that you want to buy a new pair of shoes, you walk into a shoe store and you look at the shoes, you know, and it looks like a $100 pair of shoes. It looks like a nice pair of shoes. And you walk in and you say to the guy selling the shoes, how much are the shoes? And he says, those will be $6,500. Well, you can look at him and say, well, that's crazy. I mean, I thought I wanted shoes, but I don't want to get shoes for the price of a small car. No. And better yet, you can walk out of the shoe store and walk up the block to another shoe store or even go on Amazon and look for the shoes. If you you woke up that morning and said, you know, I think I need a new pair of shoes, you don't wake up one morning and say, I think I want to go to the emergency room and see what they have for sale today. You're there unwillingly. You typically just took a $1,000 ambulance ride to get there, which you didn't decide about, and you get all the bills. And you don't know what they say because they're in code, they're an acronym. You know, shoes are shoes. You know what the shoes are. It's not a marketplace like any other marketplace in our country.
Another listener, Stephen in Prospect Heights, writes, I feel that the issue is the insurance companies. I examine all my claims, doctor or hospital charge times amount, and typically the insurance company pays only 10%. So maybe healthcare providers feel the need to intentionally pad.
No, that's not the case. First of all, insurance companies pay a lot more than 10%. Second, that whatever they pay has been pre-negotiated, so nobody's padding. You know, they're padding instinctively, but it's an institutional pad, if you will. They're not doing it bill by bill. And insurance is, it's a relatively ho-hum, easy business because they don't really have to care about how much they pay out because they can just raise your premiums. There isn't, you know, one of the other things I found is there isn't that much competition for insurance, and I know this from personal experience. Having started a bunch of businesses, and each time my wife, who's been the general counsel of my businesses, you know, sets out to buy health insurance. And there, typically, if you're starting at what at least starts out to be a small business, there may be one or two insurance companies that will compete for your business. There is not competition.
Although insurance companies give you as much a hard time as possible. I keep on getting things
asking me to prove
that I'm not also on another insurance plan.
That's
a way that they prevent themselves from having to pay any of my bills.
No, I'm not defending the practices of those insurance companies at all. But what I'm saying is they're sort of in the middle, and increasingly their power is eroding. And, in fact, one of the ironies of the Obamacare reforms is that by creating insurance exchanges, this is sort of, you know, the best of intentions gone awry, I think. By creating these insurance exchanges, if you create more insurance companies in a market so that there is competition, remember what I said before about the insurance companies' real negotiations with the hospitals? Well, if no insurance company has a large market share in a community, then the hospital doesn't need the insurance company. So the hospital can drive a harder bargain. What I mean is, you know, let's say there are 10 insurance companies that really are active in a city instead of, let's say, two or three. The hospital can take the position that it can bargain harder with each of them because it doesn't really, really need any one of the 10. If there's one big kahuna in the market, then the insurance company can bargain harder with the hospital.
We're going to take a little break when we come back, more about Obamacare. And you said nice things about Medicare. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about Medicare and related matters. Stephen Brill's eye-opening article in the current issue of Time magazine is called Bitter Pill: How Outrageous Pricing and Egregious Profits Are Destroying Our Healthcare. Stay with us for more. We are back with Stephen Brill. His article, Bitter Pill: How Outrageous Pricing and Egregious Profits Are Destroying Our Healthcare, is in the current issue of Time magazine, the longest article ever published in Time magazine, just because there's so much stuff? Because I don't feel this is padded at all.
I'm not sure it's a great achievement not to be able to write, you know, briefly, but in this case, there was a lot of ground to cover.
Why is there a tendency to conduct in-depth tests when, in most cases, there are simpler or more standard tests available? Is this just about padding the bills, too?
Well, there are a lot of things going on in that sense. The two major things are, first of all, there's a profit incentive. More tests equal more and very easy profit for the hospital and for the doctor who gets an extra fee to read the test. Second, there's the issue of malpractice and tort reform.
Well, a lot of people, conservatives especially, say that the only reason we have these high medical bills is because malpractice has just driven up rates.
It's not the only reason. It's way overstated, but it is a convenient excuse and a real excuse. In other words, you go into an emergency room. You know, you've slipped and you've fallen. Typically, if you've fallen on your arm, okay, so they look at your arm. But if you mention the word head, as in, you know, as I got up, I had to clear my head. As soon as you say head, or if the fall touched your face or anything, they're going to give you a CAT scan. They are just going to do it. Now, one reason is it's a belt and suspenders approach. Why not? The equipment's there. It doesn't take much time, and they'll get a good fee for it. The doctor will get a fee for reading it. The second reason is that if you leave the emergency room and if it turns out you had a concussion or something and they didn't check it, they're protected because they did everything they could. It's sort of like there's a quote in there where a hospital administrator says, you know, it's like, you know, patting down the old lady at the airport security line. You know, why not?
Well, I had I don't know if I want to admit to having been so stupid as to be riding a bike in Berlin without a helmet on, but I did.
That is stupid.
Well, everybody did there, but I shouldn't have. Anyway, I fell. I was knocked over and fell and bashed open my skull, and an ambulance came, and they took me to the hospital. They put me in a room with another person. They gave me a CAT scan because I had this head injury. Yeah. And then they were afraid that I might skip out and not pay the $500 bill. Now, I'm looking here at one of the bills you have in this article, CAT scan head without contrast, whatever that means, $1,788. CAT scan maxillofacial without whatever, $2,375. CAT scan cervical spine without, $2,375. That's a lot of money for CAT scans.
You would have had all those tests. You would have walked out of that hospital with a $15,000 or $20,000 bill if it was any place in the United States.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that I only had my accident in Berlin. But still, why is it – I realize that Berlin does not have national health.
Remember also that –
Germany doesn't have national health.
Well, but Germany has controls on pricing, and Germany – specifically Germany, has controls on what can be charged for those kinds of tests. And we have none of that here. And in fact, what a study by McKinsey found that I talk about in the article is that the more equipment you have out there, the more people use it. Not only use it because there's more of it, but the more uses each piece of equipment gets. It just becomes a habit. It becomes totally routine. And that, you know, it's the routine over-testing. It's like lab tests. You know, if you're in a hospital, they give you every kind of blood test every day.
But you also...
Because they can.
You also have a situation here. You talk about somebody with, let's say, advanced cancer. The patient chooses non-treatment to spare the family economic hardship, and then the hospital won't go along with that?
No, the hospital grudgingly went along.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor, to whose credit, actually suggested it, said, you know, this, not only is this expensive, but it's going to be really painful. It's only going to prolong your life, this treatment, another 4 or 5 weeks. And the guy decided, for reasons of both pain and money, not to do it.
But you also
it's
point
a terrible out, decision to
you, you also point out that in many instances, the people who are least able to pay are charged the highest rates.
Right. If you don't have insurance, you're the one who gets the charge master rate. And not only not have insurance, you know, we throw around a number. We say X percent of Americans don't have health insurance. The Y percent is what's really important, which is Americans who think they have health insurance, but it has limits on it. Lifetime limits and annual payout limits, which Obamacare has eliminated beginning this year, but also per hospital visit limits, and yeah. Which mean nothing. I mean, if you have an inexpensive insurance policy, which may be the only thing you can afford, the only thing you can get if you're on your own or if you're in a small business, but if that policy says we'll pay you up to $2,000 per day in the hospital, I mean, that's nothing. You're going to be, you know, it's going to be $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, $15,000, or $20,000 a day in the hospital.
You said earlier that not-for-profit hospitals are actually for-profit hospitals,
right?
And they're supposed to be less expensive than the for-profit hospitals,
right? Well, no, they're not supposed to be less expensive unless you take sort of the instinctive approach that something that's for-profit must be gouging you, and something that's non-profit won't be, which is a perfectly natural way of looking at things when you hear the word nonprofit and when you hear the word charity, but it's not the reality in the medical marketplace. There's a paragraph in there where, after I explain how the Stanford Hospital makes all this money and how high the salaries are, I explain that the politics of hospitals, local hospitals, are such that they typically have, you know, more of a political constituency than almost any other institution in a community, because they have obviously the medical establishment, obviously the workers, who are often, you know, unionized and themselves are a political force, and they're seen as the community's, you know, best charity. There's a charitable, you know, there's a charity dinner every year that's a big civic event. You know, everybody in town who's anybody, you know, shows up and pays $100 or $500 a plate for the charity dinner. Turns out at Stanford Hospital, all that charitable fundraising accounts for maybe 0.5% of what their real revenues are, which are the, you know, the $15 niacin pills and the CAT scans. And then right after that, there's a paragraph in there that points out that in the middle of right now, the, you know, the debate over the budget and healthcare, the New York Times did a story quoting the president of the Montefiore Hospital system in the Bronx, as saying that he's reached the point where any cut at all in federal aid would come right out of patient care. Just go straight to patient care. The patients would suffer. And he says to the Times, "I am telling you, I am not crying wolf." Well, actually, to the tune of $196 million, he is crying wolf. That's the profit he made last year. And that doesn't include the $4 million salary he got.
So a listener writes, Robert from Valley Stream, if hospitals are going out of business, if it's such a great business, why is that the case? If you pay $5 for a cup of coffee, that's because of service. You're also paying for malpractice.
No, you're not paying. You know, the malpractice cost in a hospital, you know, the premiums for insurance or the payouts of, in lawsuits, that's relatively negligible. The real cost of malpractice is not borne by the hospital, it's borne by patients because of all the over-testing. But again, some hospitals, few hospitals, are going out of business because they're being gobbled up and driven out of business by hospitals in the same community that are consolidating and buying up physicians' practices, and therefore they're losing their patients.
But don't some of them struggle to turn a profit because of the populations that they serve?
Not
I mean, we
typically
have a two-tier system, don't we?
Well, you know, if you have a hospital system in the Bronx that's making $197 million a year and paying its CEO $4 million and the head of its dental department over $1 million, it's hard to make an argument that just because a hospital is serving a challenged community, it's not going to make money.
Now, a listener, David from Fredericksburg, Virginia, I think he's a bit sarcastic in this. He writes, "One small problem, hospitals and other medical providers can't make it on the oh-so-wonderful Medicare. Medicare takes a ride at the expense of everyone else. Hospitals lose large amounts of money treating patients on Medicare, and even more on those that have Medicaid. It's patients that have other insurance that have to pick up the slack."
Well, that's not true. And he says
it's just another way that the government buries additional taxes via the higher insurance premiums you and your employer have to pay.
That's just not true. And if he reads the article, he'll see that it's not true. But the best evidence that it's not true is drive up and down any of the highways in Florida, in Central Florida in particular. You see billboards advertising brand new hospital buildings, advertising for patients, saying we've got this new service, that new service, this new service. Who are the patients they're advertising for in Florida? They're Medicare patients. They wouldn't be advertising for those patients in the middle of Florida if they weren't. They make money on Medicare patients.
And it's the reason that Rick Scott, a very conservative governor of Florida, is going to go along with Obamacare because those are his constituents. And you describe Medicare as one of the more efficient players in the healthcare field.
Yeah, this is kind of shocking. You know, you think of Medicare, just instinctively you think of any big government agency, and this is one of the big ones, as has to be a bureaucracy, has to be wasting money. And in fact, Medicare is much more efficient than any private insurance company in terms of the cost of its claims process, how it buys health services, how it gathers real cost data to determine that it should try to make nonprofit hospitals nonprofit by paying them what it costs, including all their overhead, all their salaries, but not more than what it costs. And I spent a day at the Medicare campus outside Baltimore and was sort of stunned. You know, I'm sort of a cynical person about big institutions, and was stunned at how dedicated, how non-political, and how efficient the people were who operate that system.
Now, Stephen, we have very little time, but a number of people have asked about America having a free enterprise system and that competition is supposed to keep prices down. Why isn't it working?
Well, because you can't. I'm a deep believer, as you know, in the free enterprise system. I started a bunch of free enterprises. You can't have a free enterprise system if the people who are buying have no power, no control over prices, no visibility into prices, and no ability to make any kind of an informed decision.
And
that's where it's broken down.
Another listener wonders why preventive care has not become more of a priority.
Well, Obamacare helps with that by making insurance companies provide various kinds of preventive care without any deductible or copay.
Stephen Brill's article, Bitter Pill, How Outrageous Pricing and Egregious Profits Are Destroying Our Healthcare. It's an eye-opening, long article in Time magazine, the current issue, special report. Thank you so much for being on our show
today. Happy to be with you. Great to be back.